Good morning. Now you can hear me. It is so good to see you all here. Good morning. My name is Pastor Aaron Fitzgerald, and I have the privilege of serving on staff here at St. Paul's as one of the associate pastors. And we are moving through a series here at the Open Door called This Is Us. It's a little bit of a play on the television show that's sweeping the nation right now on NBC. It's a great show, and we wanted to explore what it means to be us at the Open Door, and what does it look like to be welcomed into this space and into this family of God and into this faith community. So we're talking about This Is Us through the lens of the book of Ruth in the Old Testament. And we're looking at Ruth's story because she is this amazing, fierce, resilient, strong woman of God who knew the importance of community, who leaned on her sister, and even during hard times found her people so that she could do her life, so that she could build her life and thrive and survive. So this morning we're going to continue on in the Gospel of Ruth, and we are moving on to the next phase of the story. So we've introduced the story of Ruth and where she was from and who she is and how she's a foreigner living in a strange land as a widow. And widows living in a strange land were pretty much like scum of the earth. They didn't have the things they needed, the money to their name, the social status that would have given them a place in the hierarchy of the system in which they lived and operated. And so Ruth encounters herself in a relationship with a man named Boaz, and she starts working in his field. And we're going to continue that story and read the scripture. So this is from Ruth 2. Then Boaz said to Ruth, "Now listen, my daughter. Do not go and to glean in another field or leave this one, but keep close to my young women. Keep your eyes on the field that is being reaped and follow behind them. I have ordered the young men not to bother you. If you get thirsty, go to the vessels and drink from what the young men have drawn." Then she fell prostrate. She fell down with her body, with her face to the ground. And she said to him, "Why have I found favor in your sight that you should take notice of me when I am a foreigner?" But Boaz answered her, "All that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told to me. And how you left your father and mother and your native land and came to a people that you did not know before. May the Lord reward you for your deeds, and may you have a full reward from the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come for refuge." Then she said, "May I continue to find favor in your sight, my Lord, for you have comforted me and spoken kindly to your servant, even though I am not one of your servants." So we have a lot of juxtaposition in this story between who Ruth sees herself as a foreigner, as a woman, as someone not related to Boaz, not employed by Boaz, and then Boaz saying, "Oh, but I know you, I know your story, I know the places you've been, I know your people, and I've seen what you've done, and I want to take you in as one of mine. I want to make you one of my people. I want to help you, and we'll grow together." These juxtapositions that we make between us and them don't matter. And I believe one of the beautiful things about this story in the book of Ruth is that God is trying to reveal to us about how we make divisions in our life between us and them, whether you go to my school or whether you go to a different school, whether you're educated like me or whether you're not, whether I'm your boss and you're my minion, whether you're a United Methodist or an Episcopalian, whether you are a Christian and I am a Muslim. We make all these divisions, no matter what neighborhood we live in, no matter we live in the suburbs or in Detroit. We take all these divisions, and God says to us in this story, he says, it's not about us and them. Look about how these people from totally different stages in their life came together and made a new life together. They started over by giving each other a second chance, by giving each person a sense of worth and by empowering them, uplifting them, and giving them a purpose. This is what happened to Ruth. She was a person who didn't have a role in the society. And Boaz says, come and work in my fields. Come and glean the wheat behind the other people who I pay. And get what you need to survive for you and your sister, Naomi. And then more than that, drink the water that my people need. Refresh yourself from the same well. Even though you're a foreigner, we don't know where you come from. We trust you, and we want you to drink from our cup. This was a powerful statement that moved them together instead of separate. I think in the midst of all these times, when we're wondering who we are and who we're called to be, one of the things that we can remember most is that we're called to be together as a community. We're not called into division, but we're called into relationship. We're called into relationship first because God created us in God's image, in the imago Dei, and offered us a chance at relationship. And then, as we are in relationship with God, we are to reflect the image of Christ, the imago Christi, and show each other, show all people, the love that we have received in him, so that there's a ripple effect, so that it keeps going and going and going and reverberating and transforming the world. One person, one relationship, one community at a time. Now, I don't know about you, but when I meet a new person, one of the things that automatically just comes out of my mouth is, oh, hi, my name is Erin. Tell me your name. And who are you? What do you do? Right? When we introduce ourselves, one of the first things that we always talk about is our job. I think. You're not really nodding along. Do you agree with me or not? Oh, okay, good. Okay. And then we start talking about family, and we start talking about where we grew up and where we live now and all kinds of other deeper things. But one of the first things that comes out is your name and then what kind of job you've had. So I want to ask you a question. We're going to do a little interactive poll here on our mentees. So take out your phone, if you will, and open your browser, your web browser. That might be Safari or Chrome. Then go to the website called menti.com, menti.com. And it's going to prompt you to enter a 6-digit code. Today our code is 899059. All right, and the question I want you to answer in this poll is simply to name a job you've had. You might be able to name as many jobs as you have fingers and toes that you've had. But tell me some of the most interesting jobs you've had, or the one that you're working in now, or the one that you loved the most, or perhaps the one that you didn't like. If you've already entered one, you're allowed to enter another. You can make a couple of entries using that same code. Oh, very good. We're getting 40 responses in so far. Thank you, thank you, thank you for participating. All right, so we've had people who've done a myriad of jobs. We have teachers and social workers and engineers, project managers, a pool girl, a painter, a firefighter, a waitress, a cashier, a telemarketer. Oh, ho, ho. We've had system analysts, flower shop employees, medical technologists, babysitters, yes, custodians, landscapers, medical uniform salesperson, event planners. Wonderful. So as we look at ourselves in relationship to Ruth and Boaz, we know that we are all working people. That when we are created, we are created with a purpose. And when we are put into community, it's often in our place of work, in our homes, in our neighborhoods. There is nobody up here whose job we can discount and say, we don't need you. We've got these other guys. There's nobody up here who you could say, oh, a mom isn't a real job, or a teacher isn't a real job, or a nurse isn't a real job, or a project manager isn't a real job. These are all jobs that give us meaning and purpose and value in our lives. And we need each one of you in community. When we come together as people of faith and as people of St. Paul's United Methodist Church, I believe we are stronger because of the diversity in our midst. We're not divided because not all of us share the same role or position. We're more diverse, and that's beautiful and that's helpful because we all bring different gifts to the table. We all bring different gifts to this community of faith. I remember a job that I had really young growing up was to help my grandmother in her kitchen, because every year in the around the holidays, she made cinnamon rolls, delicious, delicious cinnamon rolls, and the family recipe will live on in history, and it's framed and hanging in my kitchen right now, and that's how important these cinnamon rolls are to my stomach and my livelihood and who I am as a person, okay? But my job as a young girl in my grandmother's kitchen was to be the person who, when the yeast was rising in the bowl, to peel back the towel and poke it. You had to poke the bread dough as it was rising so that it would continue to rise. And then after a while, as the dough had been rising all day, and after it was ready to come out of that bowl, I got to help roll it out on the counter and spread on the butter and cinnamon sugar mixture, and then use a pizza slice cutter, if you can imagine this, I'm sure you can, to cut up the circular piece of dough and then roll it so that it was a cinnamon roll before we could bake it. That was the process. And my job was primarily to be the poker and then to help my grandma with the rolling and the sprinkling and everything. She was the one who did all the measuring and the cutting, usually the sophisticated kitchen techniques. But one day, I remember, we were in my grandmother's kitchen and we were working on this process, and she had been waiting for a man to come to the house to help unclog a drain in their yard. They lived out in the country, and they had this drain in their yard, and it was clogged. And so there was some, like, standing water, a little bit of flooding happening. And he came, and he was going to repair the issue. And I don't remember the situation exactly, but I have an idea that it was one of those situations where the plumber says, I'll be there between 9 and 3. And you don't really know when they're coming. And so we went on with our day and our cinnamon roll preparations. And then when he arrived, she took a little break and left me in the house so that she could go show him the whole situation in the yard. And my grandmother was someone who wasn't very trusting of other people. There were a lot of circumstances that led to that, but what it amounted to in her life was that she didn't come back to the kitchen that day very quickly, because she wanted to supervise the work of the plumber. She wanted to stand and kind of peer over his shoulder and watch what he was doing, make sure he was doing it right. Now, my grandmother's not a plumber. She doesn't actually know if he was doing it right, but she wanted to supervise him. And so in the process of supervising him and showing him the problem and everything else, they get to talking. My grandmother gets to talking to this young man, and it turned out that he hadn't had breakfast that morning, she discovered. So she went back into her house, and as soon as the cinnamon rolls came out of the oven, she had me prepare a little tray with a cinnamon roll and a glass of milk and a napkin and a fork and a plate. And then she marched it out into the yard and fed this young man. And as he dined on this delicious cinnamon roll and discovered that he needed not one but two cinnamon rolls to be fully satisfied, they kept engaging in conversation. They kept engaging in relationship. And even though she didn't trust him as far as she could throw him, my grandmother started to get interested in his life. Who was he? Where did he come from? How did he get to be a plumber? Where were his parents? And did he have siblings? And all these things. And she started to engage him in a relationship. And before his job was over, he had a little sack of 6 cinnamon rolls to take home to his wife and his children. And she also put in there a Bible, because at my grandmother's church, she was taught to share her faith. And one way that she was to do that was to give away Bibles Monday through Saturday when they weren't at church. And it turned out that this man didn't have a Bible, and so she said, well, I've got a Bible. And she gave it to him as a gift in order to plant a seed and say, maybe this will do something for you. Open it up. I've bookmarked one of my favorite passages and highlighted it for you. And I'm going to send you on your way with this gift, because I want you to know what's in that Bible. And I want you to know that even if you just read that one passage of Scripture for me, that'll be enough. And she paid her bill and sent him on his way to enjoy his cinnamon rolls and the rest of his workday. Now, for my grandmother, there was this division between us and them. There were the people who came to her house to work, to fix the problem, to resolve the issue, and then it was her, the homeowner, the person who paid for the job to be done. There are these divisions that we create, but what we're called to do is to get out of our house, to offer what we have in service to God and neighbor, and hope that just one little thing will make a difference. I believe that that's what happened in the story of Ruth and Boaz. Boaz didn't know Ruth all the way through her life story, but he had heard enough to know that she was someone that was worth taking a chance on. So he said, go ahead and get into the fields and glean what you need and drink the water that you need. And I've told my people not to cause a fuss, to leave you be, because you have permission to be here. Your life is worthy too. There's something about the story of Ruth and Boaz where Boaz saw the image of God in Ruth and decided to take a chance on her. And there's something about the story of my grandmother and this plumber, where my grandmother saw the image of God in him and decided to take a chance on him. I love these opportunities that we're presented with. And I want to tell you another story of one that I read on I think it was like a CBS news site or something. But there was a young man who was a scientist, and his job was to analyze cat litter. I would like to see that up on a Menti poll someday. Cat litter analysis. And so the scientist had to go to a cat litter conference. I just love the idea of a cat litter scientist and a cat litter conference. Anyway, the point of the story is that the cat litter analyst, the scientist, was sitting in a hotel lobby and was enjoying a cup of coffee, and in walks Charles Barkley to the hotel. The NBA player, the really tall one, right? Are you with me? Okay. All right. So in walks Charles Barkley, and the cat litter analyst knew enough to say, oh, I recognize that guy. He's pretty famous. I'm gonna go take a selfie with him. And so he walks over, introduces himself, and if you can imagine Charles Barkley and this little scientist nerd guy standing next to him, there was a big height difference. And Charles says, sure, I'll take a selfie with you. And then they went back into the lobby, and Charles Barkley had a few minutes before he had to speak at a charity banquet event. And so they sat down, and rather than pulling out their phones and scrolling aimlessly, they got to talking. They struck up a conversation. They exchanged names. They started talking about what they did for a living, about their family, about who they were and where they came from. And it turned out that they had a few things in common. They got to know each other, and by the end of the few minutes of their just everyday conversation, Charles Barkley shakes his hand and says, "It's nice to know you, my friend." And so this superstar, this athlete, this famous professional athlete, gets down on the level of somebody who is not even on par, probably will never even see as much money as Charles Barkley has made in his lifetime, let alone look at it from the height that Charles Barkley does. And they've struck up this conversation. They've struck up a little friendship. The scientist goes on to make a small donation to the charitable organization that Charles Barkley is there to speak for, and then gets a thank you note, a handwritten note in the mail later on from Charles saying, "It was great to meet you. Thanks for your conversation. I'm praying for you and your family." The differences between us and them are things that we create. The things that bring us together, the things that unite us, are the everyday things, the everyday relationships, the everyday commonalities, the habits, the practices, the ways of life, the good and the bad and the ugly. Things like we've all had jobs. We've all had jobs. We've all had to take care of family members and our kids. We've all worked through hard times in our marriages, in our health, in our work environments. We've all been there. And so what is it that draws us together? What is it that makes us one instead of two? What is it that unites us? And how do we take the time to see the image of God in other people? To take the time to extend a hand, to greet one another, but also then to sit in conversation, like the cat litter analyst in Charles Barkley, like my grandmother and the plumber, like Boaz and Ruth. I want to tell you one more story, and that is that recently I have discovered the business of Shipt. Do you know what Shipt is? Shipt is a grocery delivery service, and I think it's the best thing since sliced bread. I've just discovered it recently. I discovered it during Holy Week as we were leading up to Easter. And in my family, my husband and I are both pastors, and so Holy Week is quite a busy week as we're getting ready for Palm Sunday and Maundy Thursday and Good Friday and the Easter egg hunt and Easter morning. And we've got not one pastor, but two pastors, so two churches worth of things to go. And it was helter-skelter, and it was busy, and the calendar was full, and the fridge was empty. Can you imagine? Of course you can. Of course you can. And we have a 3-year-old boy who eats us out of house and home. So we had to get groceries. And I said, I just don't think that I can do a major grocery shopping trip this week and get it all done to keep us fed and happy. Because the last thing you want during Holy Week is a hangry pastor and a hangry spouse, and a hangry pastor's kid, PK. That's just like bad news altogether. So we discovered Shipt, and we actually had some groceries delivered to our house. And you can imagine that on the Monday of Holy Week, I'm sitting in my living room wearing yoga pants and a very frayed Albion College hoodie, bent over my computer, having multiple documents open, multiple tabs open on my web browser, trying to finish all the things that we needed to get done. And then there's the doorbell, and my dog goes nuts, and my son comes running, and I discover, oh yeah, the grocery delivery. Great. So in comes this guy with all my food and with my toilet paper and my laundry soap and everything else that we needed that day. And he's just the chattiest guy. And he starts talking and talking and talking and talking and talking about how his day going, about the weather, about how busy the Meijer was on Saturday morning, Monday morning. And I said, okay, great. And then he goes one step further and he says, oh, I noticed you go to Albion College. And I said, well, I graduated from there in 2008, and I'm an alum. My husband and I are actually both alums of Albion College, Go Brits. And he says, oh, that's interesting. Well, I've got twin boys who just turned 21. And they're at Albion College right now. And I said, oh, really? That's great. Oh, Brits, get out of my house. And he keeps going and going and going. And he tells me about what the twins are majoring in and how they're doing. And one of them's got a girlfriend. The other's probably never going to date, but he might join a fraternity. And blah, 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 blah. And I said, that's great. That's great. I'm so excited they're having a good experience at Albion College. I said, how did you end up working for Shipt? If you're a dad who can afford to send twin boys to Albion College, how'd you end up working for Shipt? He said, you know what? I'm retired and I didn't want to do my desk job anymore. And I love to shop. I love to provide for my family. And one way that it feels really good to provide for my family is by getting the food and the groceries and all the things that we need each and every week. And so I thought, if I love doing this for myself, maybe I could do that for other people and take some of the hassle out of their everyday life. And I said, yes. Well, you have certainly been a blessing for me today. Thank you so much for doing my shopping. And he gave me this little card. He gave me this little card, and he says, well, my name's Bill, and if you ever need more groceries from Shipt, you call me, and I'll hook you up and everything else. And then he says, have a blessed day, and good luck with your services. And I said, my services? He says, well, yeah, aren't you the pastor at the church next door? Because I live right there. And I said, well, yeah, I'm pastor here. And I'm still in my yoga pants, my Albion College shirt, you know. And he says, oh, well, that's great. That's great. 20 years ago, my mom had her funeral at that church. My whole family was there, and the pastor, I don't remember his name, he was awesome. He took really good care of us. I still remember the words that he prayed and how he blessed the casket as it was lowered into the ground. And I remember the peace that I felt knowing that she was in heaven with Jesus. Now, I really felt like a schmuck in that moment, I have to tell you, because this whole time, I'm sitting there trying to think about how to get this guy named Bill to stop talking and get out of my house so that I can get on with my business, so that I can tend to my kid and my dog, so I can finish my sermons, get everything ready for Holy Week, put my groceries away, get the meals going, you know, all that stuff. I had it all rolling through my head, everything that had to happen. Everything else that I could have been doing, as he's telling me about his twin boys going to Albion College, as he's letting me know how busy Meyer is and that it's going to rain tomorrow. I couldn't care less. But the more we engaged in conversation, the more I started to see the image of God in him. The more I started to engage in conversation, the more patient I got. Perhaps the more Christ-like I became. Because I've had experiences like his boys are having at Albion College now. I've had experiences where a loved one died and a pastor took the time to pray with me and my family and said words that meant something to me. I've had experiences where it felt good to provide for my family by doing something as simple as grocery shopping or folding a load of laundry or reading my son a book. And I knew what that was like. And I could find the commonalities between me and him. All of a sudden, I wasn't just this busy pastor and this busy mom who had to get a bunch of stuff done. And so I ordered a service through an app that I was fortunate enough to afford as a luxury. All of a sudden, we were just people. We were just talking. I think that's what's going on here in the story of Ruth and Boaz, in the story of us and them. I think it's people coming together to find what they need, their basic human necessities, community, love, and support. And so as we go out of this place this week, I want to challenge you And I'm challenging myself too. Anytime I offer you a challenge, it's something that I need to work on too. I want to challenge you to look for the image of God in the people you relate to. Could be your family or friends or your neighbors or your strangers. It could be the person who bags your groceries at the grocery store. It could be the waitress who takes care of you at lunch today. It could be the guy who mows your lawn. Anybody is somebody who is worthy of a relationship. And so I want you to look for the image of God in that person. And then I want you to try to take the time to get to know that person. Because I bet you they've got a story to tell. I bet you they've got something they want to share that you're either going to learn something from or be touched by, or your life is going to be transformed in some way by that gift of grace. Will you pray with me? God, you are the one who created us beautiful and beloved and unique in your image. You are the one who created us to be in relationship with you and with your Son, Jesus Christ, and with one another. Help us, oh God, to get over ourselves this week, to take the risks we need to take in order to see your beauty, your holiness reflected in the life of another. Help us to see the people that you want us to see, and for our heart to extend in the ways that your love extends and reaches out to us each and every day. In the moments when we're afraid, oh God, or feeling inconvenienced, or feeling too other, too different, find a way in your time, in your way, oh God, to knit us together so that we might find a blessing in the life of someone else, and by sharing that life, one story, one moment at a time. Amen.